This is a new dimension in sound.
You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkush, and along with Mike Wilkening and Jimmy Clemens, it's my pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from the NBA, the NFL, and college hoops as well.
We'll have a recap of the NBA trades, plus more on the Eagles' logjam at quarterback.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News!
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I'm Hub Arkush, the publisher and editor here, and I will be joined, as I am every week, by the editors of Pro Football Weekly, our co-host during the basketball season, Jim Clemens, assistant coach of the LA Lakers, and Steve Kyler of Hoops World will be joining us at hoopsworld.com. But first, we're going to talk a little football. There is still a ton of NFL way we hear it as we get ready for the combine and the uncertainty of this year's group of free agents and the changes in the free agency rules. And we start with senior editor Mike Wilkening, and we talk, Wilkie, about, well, the rare free agent who's already been signed. Dante Stallworth was reinstated by Commissioner Roger Goodell the day of the Super Bowl. He was released by the Cleveland Browns the next day, and he now has a new home with the Baltimore Ravens. Tell us what you think the Ravens are thinking on that one.
Well, Hubba, it's pretty clear that the Ravens needed wide receiver depth. They needed some better speed at the position, and Dante Stallworth has shown when he's played that he's able to provide just that. Now, I think Stallworth comes in with the opportunity to compete for a role immediately. Now, the Ravens have quite a bit of fluidity in terms of their wide receiver situation right now. Derek Mason is 36, has contemplated retirement, could come back, but it's unclear as to whether or not that's going to happen or not. And the options beyond him, I don't think are number one receiver types. Dante Stallworth has rarely been that in his career, but he does bring some quickness and some speed to the equation. He's a guy that has produced somewhat in the NFL. Now, the obvious question with Dante Stallworth is, what does he have left after sitting out the 2009 season, kind of after being suspended after pleading guilty, to DUI manslaughter from the incident in South Florida last year?
Well, Mike, it looks like the AFC North is becoming the home for wayward boys, wide receiver wayward boys, I guess, is the Cincinnati Bengals, well known behind Marvin Lewis and Mike Brown for giving players second chances, have extended a one-year contract to Matt Jones. He, the disappointment down in Jacksonville, former quarterback at Arkansas, who was drafted as a wide receiver in the first round, no end of off-the-field problems, sat out last season, but he now is a Cincinnati Bengal, I assume in part to try and fill the void left by the tragic death of Chris Henry.
I think so. I mean, I think that's one of the natural things you kind of look at is, well, they really had a difficult time replacing Chris Henry last year from the time he exited the lineup. Really it just became sort of a glaring need in terms of having a guy that could stretch the field vertically. But Matt Jones has really never been quite that type of player in the NFL. He's never had a catch of 50 yards. He really was a possession type receiver in Jacksonville. But even if he fills that role in Cincinnati, it helps the Bengals out in terms of moving the chains on third downs, sort of giving, taking a little bit of the pressure off of Chad Ochocinco. As we saw in the playoffs, they really were not able to do that effectively. Ochocinco, I think, is a guy that elite corners can kind of take him away, and I think they need more complementary type targets. Now, Jones, again, is a guy out of football last year. What does he have left? And, the Bengals, it's a one-year kind of flyer on him. Let's see what he's able to do. But, again, I don't know if he's going to be the 65-catch guy he was in Jacksonville. I don't know if the Bengals expect him to be that. But if he can be someone that's a fairly effective player and gives them one more option, then I think it's a good signing for them.
Mike, real quickly, though, the reason he was on the street is the Jaguars and a judge in Jacksonville gave him a chance to get his act together. He said, no, I'd rather do it my way, and the Jags cut him loose. Is there any reports of what he's done in the last year that would help us think that he's going to have better luck in Cincinnati than he did in Jacksonville?
I think we have to keep in mind the drug possession charge. He was charged with cocaine possession in March of 2009. That preceded the release from Jacksonville, and then violated his parole and was put back in jail. But that charge was later dropped. He graduated from a Washington County, Arkansas drug court, which is kind of a diversion program. So he eventually complied and that charge was dropped. So, and there's been no report of anything, otherwise with Matt Jones since. So, you know, hopefully this is a case where he's gotten things straightened out, and is able to sort of resume his career and life going forward.
All right, Mike, we've only got a minute, but I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, where Kevin Colbert, the director of player personnel, has come out and said that his main priority in the next coming weeks is to re-sign his own free agents, Casey Hampton, Jeff Reed, and Ryan Clark. There were some questions, particularly in the case of Reed, how aggressive the Steelers were going to be, but apparently Colbert is saying that they absolutely want their own back before they will look anywhere else.
Right, and I think you look at all three guys, they all fill clear roles on that team. Hampton, we know with the proliferation of the 3-4 around the league, it's very hard to find nose tackles. He's a guy that has played at a Pro Bowl level in the past. Certainly they want to retain him. Ryan Clark, a good compliment to Troy Polamalu, you know, physical big hitter. Certainly they want to bring him back. And Reed is a guy that his kickoffs are a little bit on the short side of things, but he's someone that's able to kick at Heinz Field. And Hub, we know this. It's maybe the most difficult place in the league to kick. The natural turf there, sometimes tough. The winds are very trying. He's a guy that 45 yards and in has been very effective. He suits what they do very well. It's pretty clear why they've targeted these three guys.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. We're going to have more Way We Hear It coming up in just a moment. We will check in with senior editor Eric Edholm as we go around the NFL. We're back after these quick commercial words. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I'm Hub Arkish, and I'm now joined by senior editor Eric Edholm, who specializes in the NFC East beat for us, amongst other clubs that he covers. And, Eric, I'm actually going to go out of the East real quick first with the Minnesota Vikings, one of your teams, and news out of Minnesota State Court late this week that the Williams twins, Pat and Kevin Williams, have gotten a victory in their court case, their state court case against the NFL. Actually, some rulings for either side, but nonetheless, one that the Williams twins can claim victory on. Apparently, have been given permission to go ahead and sue the NFL if that's what they choose to do.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Hub, because the first reaction was from the NFL, which also claimed victory. So, you know, this is one of those situations where maybe a bit of a split decision, if you want to use that term. Basically, yes, they have the right to sue the NFL. This is going back to that StarCaps case, which has dragged on now for more than a year, back to the 2008 season when they tested positive and were served with 4-game suspensions that were since revoked. Now, obviously, those suspensions, there's an injunction that kind of holds them up right now, but they're going to get their court date. It's starting March 8th, and it's possible that, you know, within a few days or a week of that date, they could find out whether they're going to have to serve those suspensions before next season or not.
Well, and the interesting piece in all this is this judge did rule that the fact that the NFL's collective bargaining agreement is collectively bargained does not overrule their right to action in state court, but that's going to be the heart of this March 8th hearing, and that's going to be the heart of the NFL's claim, and this is a ruling that would probably be handled differently in other states, and it calls into question a much bigger issue that really has nothing to do with sports. This is about state court versus federal court, and depending on how far these two sides choose to pursue this, this could be, you know, landmark type stuff.
I think it's going to have a bearing on this whole American Needle thing. It's going to, you know, the NFL, you know, claiming, you know, obviously the argument over whether they are 32 individual entities or one large entity. And, there's some greater implications here that go beyond two defensive tackles, whether they're going to miss a quarter of the season or not.
All right, now let's get to the NFC East, as I promised. The Dallas Cowboys' Miles Austin, a free agent. He will not be unrestricted. And as a result, Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, their personnel director, has said, we don't feel the need to hang a tag on him. By giving him the highest tender, a little over $3 million, if somebody else wants to sign him, they're going to have to part with a first and a third round draft choice. They don't think that's going to happen. I suspect they're right, but are they playing a little bit of Russian roulette here?
I think the risk, obviously, Hub, with Austin is that he's a guy that took 3-4 years to develop into what he was last year, a 1,300-yard receiver, and he was tremendous. I mean, he was the Cowboys' best wide receiver last year. He and Tony Romo formed a bond that can't be denied. Obviously goes into next season as the go-to guy, with Roy Williams not really stepping up to this point. It is a risk, yes, no question about it, but the first and third-round pick bounty they would receive in return, it is unlikely that teams are going to pay that price. But, you know, again, they are playing with fire. They are risking the chance of losing a young wide receiver that looked like a true number one last season.
Can we look at the Philadelphia Eagles, where backup quarterback Kevin Kolb will be a restricted free agent? He is saying that they haven't even heard from the Eagles about a contract. It seems that everybody but the Philadelphia Eagles thinks that they may be trading Donovan McNabb. The Eagles have continually said no. And then you add the offensive line concerns, where Stacey Andrews was a big money free agent last year, was injured and didn't play all year long. They want to redo his deal. What's happening in Philadelphia really behind the scenes, and where do all these players really stand?
Well, let me clean up one thing real quick, Hub. Kolb's deal, it is confusing, obviously, with the CBA stuff, but Kolb's deal does run through 2010. Same with Donovan McNabb. So you have two quarterbacks who after next season are up, and they will be unrestricted free agents, you know, whether there's a season or a new CBA or not. So that's a tough situation for the team to deal with. I mean, they've got to decide, you know, do they keep McNabb for a year? Do they have Kolb in place? You know, it looked good in two starts, so that's a small sample size to go on. You know, it could be the next Rob Johnson for all we know. So, you know, there was some talk last week that there was a contract extension. Kolb came out and said, no, there was not. The two sides have not talked. So that was flatly denied both by player, agent, and by the Eagles. So it's a real fluid situation at this point. Obviously, the McNabb rumors have flown. Andy Reid and company have stayed quiet. They haven't said anything. And they're not expected to talk at the Combine, so we may not know about anything, any more news on this for a little while.
All right, Eric, and finally, we've got just about a minute left. The New England Patriots, a couple of different rumors with the Pats. First, we're told that Deion Branch has been told by the Seattle Seahawks he will be back, but he apparently has indicated he would welcome a trade back to New England. And then separately, we hear rumors that the New England Patriots might be interested in unrestricted free agent Carlos Dansby, a linebacker, although certainly not the front runner in that chase. What are you hearing on these two fronts?
Yeah, it's real interesting. And obviously, the Patriots are a real tough team to read. You look at the tea leaves, you can try to guess what they might do. They've got contract situations with Vince Wilfork, an unrestricted free agent, Tom Brady. But, you know, the Branch rumor is interesting. That somebody had kind of floated the idea of an Adalys Thomas for Branch trade. You know, two guys that really don't fit in with their current teams. You know, maybe there's some value there. It's possible. They need help at wide receiver with Wes Welker coming back. Randy Moss in the last year of his deal. That could happen. That bears watching. The Dansby stuff, it is an interesting rumor, and I think the Patriots do like him as a player, but it would probably go against their nature. Other than that one year they signed Thomas and Stallworth and a couple other big-name free agents, they haven't been huge players on the market, and I don't expect them to go in. Now, if there's a slower-than-expected market for Dansby, maybe they dip their toes in the water a little bit.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. We've still got lots more Way We Hear It coming up. Senior editor, I should say executive editor, Dan Arkish, Michael Blunda, Dan Parr. They'll all check in just a moment with more NFL Way We Hear It. We roll on with more NFL Way We Hear It. I'm Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor at Pro Football Weekly, and I'm joined by various members of our editorial staff. We start with executive editor Dan Arkish. And, Dan, the St. Louis Rams, a team that most folks around the NFL will be watching very closely, they will have the number one overall pick in the draft, and they are the one team that we keep hearing may be pursuing a strategy in which they would deal with the Philadelphia Eagles for Michael Vick. What are you hearing on those two fronts?
Well, I hear that there definitely is an interest in Michael Vick. Hub, you know, Billy Devaney, the GM there, was an assistant GM in Atlanta and knows Vick quite well. They feel that he could be an interesting guy under center, not necessarily long-term, but certainly as a bridge. And what they might do then is also draft a quarterback in the second or third round and hope that he turns into like another Drew Brees or some sort of strategy like that. But there's all kinds of moving parts right now with people like Sam Bradford and Jimmy Clausen, people starting to talk more positively about them. There is sentiment for the Rams possibly, you know, trading down and going after one of those guys, which would create some buzz, you know, in a market that needs it with the new ownership and whatnot.
Of course, the problem there is you always need to find a trade partner. If they're stuck at number one, what's the latest you're hearing?
Well, you know, Ngamukong Suh, sorry for mispronouncing that name, but, you know, he has been the guy that everybody's been talking about, the Nebraska defensive tackle, Gerald McCoy. Both those guys are very highly regarded, and the Rams badly need a space-eating tackle. And so, you know, they couldn't go wrong if they went that route. And so that's probably, if they stay put, it's going to be one of those two tackles.
And Dan, very quickly, what can you tell us about the man that we believe will be the new owner of the St. Louis Rams? Of course, he requires league approval, but for all practical purposes, it looks like Shahid Khan of Champaign, Illinois, is going to be the majority owner of the St. Louis Rams.
That's correct, Hub. He's a self-made billionaire and a loyal Rams fan who says he's very committed to keeping the team in St. Louis, which was a key reason Chip Rosenblum went after him. And so far, the perception in St. Louis is quite positive. You know, there's very little known about him, but the key thing right now is for the finance committee, the owner of the owners' meetings, approving him, and probably at the end of May at that meeting in Dallas, it's very likely that he will become the majority owner.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. I'm going to ask you to hand off the microphone to Associate Editor Dan Parr, and one of the teams on Dan's beat is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Dan, apparently Mark Domenic, the young GM, has had the unenviable task of informing his fan base that in spite of the disaster that 2009 was, don't expect us to do much in free agency?
That's right, Hub, and he made it sure to say that this is not something that he's been told to do by ownership. He hasn't said that there's any kind of limit placed on him. He said that's not the case in terms of what kind of money he has to spend. He said this is just his philosophy, that the best way to go about building this team is through the draft. The Bucks have five of the first 99 picks. Now, there's a chance that they could be active in the trade market. The Bucks did make a deal last offseason, if you remember, for Kellen Winslow, in which they gave up a couple picks. So if they find a player they like is available through a trade, they could go step up and find a veteran, a proven player. But otherwise, it looks like they're going to be building with young talent.
You know, the other interesting story I heard out of Tampa the other day was Domenic talking about the big improvements he saw in Raheem Morris over the last couple of weeks of the season. And yet, according to some pretty good sources of mine, I do believe there was an outreach by ownership to Bill Cowher. What is the real status and relationship right now for Raheem Morris in the Bucs?
Well, his job isn't going to get a lot easier if Dominic's only going to give him a group of rookies to build the team with. The fans are getting don't have much patience right now. That, like you said, there have been reports that that ownership was reaching out to Bill Cowher to see if they could lure him in. So I don't think that there's going to be a very long leash on Raheem Morris. I do think that there's the improvements expected this season. But the relationship between him and Mark Domenic doesn't seem like it could be much better. Mark Domenic has made a point every opportunity he's had to really praise Morris, and he he was able to improve that defense when he took over as coordinator late last season. So he did show signs that, you know, with a little bit of added responsibility in his hands on that defense, it did look better. So you have to give him credit for that. But overall, it was, as you mentioned, a pretty disastrous season in 2009 for the Bucks.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. If you can turn it over to Associate Editor Michael Blunda, we want to check on one more team out west, and Michael covers the San Diego Chargers. You know, Michael, we've talked a lot about the big-name free agents in San Diego's, the Malcolm Floyds and the Vincent Jacksons and the Sean Merrimans, and yet a guy you don't hear much about is their Pro Bowl special teamer, Kasim Osgood. What are the chances, and he is unrestricted in spite of the change in the free agency market, what are the chances that they're able to retain him for their special teams?
Well, Hub, they would love to have him back. You know, the guy's a three-time Pro Bowl special teamer, but he really is interested in going to a place that's going to let him play wide receiver, and that just doesn't look like it's going to be San Diego. They have Vincent Jackson, Malcolm Floyd, you know, Legadunane, just to name a few guys, and the chances of him getting into the rotation there at wide receiver don't seem very good, which means that he could be looking elsewhere for employment next season.
All right, so one special teamer gets away in San Diego, maybe. That's what we're hearing. We need to take a quick commercial break, and then it is time for us to begin the basketball season here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. We're back with my co-hosts Jimmy Clemens and Mike Wilkening in just a moment.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
And we do get back to the basketball season here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News for the first time in a little while, and that makes it my great pleasure to welcome back Mike Wilkening, senior editor at PFW and Basketball News, and our co-host for the basketball season, Jim Clemens of the LA Lakers. Jimmy, it is great to have you back on board, and I know that things are going well in Lakerland, probably not as well as you'd like with the Cavaliers so hot, and even more than that, the injury to Kobe Bryant. Conflicting reports out there right now as to what's going on with Kobe's ankle and how long he might be out. Where is your ball club at before we start talking about the rest of the league?
Well, we don't have a full complement, obviously, with Kobe being out right now, but we are basically healthy. We we're a little nicked up, as most teams are this time of year, but as one of my colleagues, Johnny Bach, used to say, the dogs bark, but the caravan moves on. So we got to lick our wounds and continue to play. And, yes, we are chasing Cleveland for the best record right now in the league, and look like they're trying to get a little bit stronger here, but hopefully we'll be able to seal the deal come June.
Well, Jim, before we move over to the East, I just want to ask you quickly about the West, because it's been an interesting season. It certainly is still an extremely competitive conference, at least 10 or 11 teams fighting for 8 playoff spots. You guys, great when you're healthy with Kobe. The Nuggets have been strong all year long. But other teams, not as strong as they were last year. You've got a big jumble there with the Mavericks hot early. The Spurs are struggling right now. Jazz have put a hot streak together now to get caught up with you guys. But it just appears that there's even more balance than ever in the West.
Well, the West is going to stay competitive because I think everyone believes that we're the team to beat, and they certainly give us their A game every time we play a Western Conference opponent. And then we beat up on each other because we do see each other, at least 3 times a year, 4 times in most cases. We know how to play each other. It's like when we go East, we have a difficult time because you only see those clubs twice. And those games are highly competitive, but usually, now let me knock on wood as I say this, we had one good Eastern trip and we have another one coming. But when you play in interconference, just know how to play and they know how competitive it is, so you're going to get their best games.
Well, Wilkie, we're going to talk a lot about the trade deadline recently passed and big moves when we get to the next segment, but certainly the team, as Jimmy mentions, to beat has been the Cleveland Cavaliers, and in adding Antoine Jamison without really losing much, you got to wonder who's going to catch him in the East.
Right, and, you know, you look at Orlando, certainly, you know, Atlanta is a team out of the Southeast I think you keep an eye on. Certainly they can do some things. You know, I don't know if there's anyone in the Atlantic at this point capable of matching up with Cleveland for any extended stretch of games. You have to wonder about Boston going forward. It doesn't look like the same team that it was, you know, in past seasons. Look like they're starting to show their age a little bit. So right now, you would think that Cleveland, considering, again, what they were able to acquire in Jamison, the fact that LeBron has played as wonderfully as he has, you would have to think that they're the clear-cut favorites in the East. It's going to be very, very difficult to knock them off.
Jimmy, I'm curious, you know, Wilkie's comment about the Celtics, and clearly they have struggled this year at times. Now, they haven't really had all hands on deck. They've had some injuries. They are showing some age. But do you think, I know you were actually a couple hours away from tip-off with them as we laid this show down late this week, but I'm sure you had scouted them. Do they look that much different to you, or is it maybe just that they don't have everybody playing together at the same time?
Well, they're trying to get healthy. Marquise Daniels is healthy now, and he's back playing minutes. There's some question if they were going to do the house deal for Robinson. That usually keeps teams at bay going into the stretch. But they're going to be competitive. They're warriors. They know what is at stake. They know teams are kind of riding them off. And I actually think they may revel in teams not thinking they're not as strong. And they're going to make a real push in the end here because, once again, as we say in the vernacular, they know how to win. They know how to close out games, and you can't count them out.
All right, guys, I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick commercial break here, and then we're going to get into all the big moves leading up to the trade deadline. A lot more NBA talk coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to Basketball News and Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkish, along with Jimmy Clemens and Mike Wilkin. And it's now our pleasure to welcome in our regular visitor, Steve Kyler, one of the very best NBA insiders out there. HoopsWorld.com. Steve is the publisher, and for their very best in NBA news 24/7, you want to visit HoopsWorld.com on the web. And Steve, trade deadline just recently passed. It's been the story around the NBA this week, and it's hard to say what the biggest deal is. A couple that approach blockbuster status, but I think right now all eyes on Cleveland and the Cavs' ability to acquire Antoine Jamison.
Absolutely, Hub. This is one of those push all the chips to the center of the table and hope you've got the right cards, because when you look around the Eastern Conference, you know, Boston has clearly not been as dominant as everybody thought they'd be. A lot of injuries. Orlando really struggled out of the gate. They've been good as of late. And I think that Cleveland looked around the league and said, look, you know, Kobe Bryant's missed a number of games. The Lakers are a little banged up. Maybe this is our year. They had to get Anton Jamison really for a song. They're giving up Zydrunas Ilgauskas, who's likely going to get bought out 30 days from now, likely coming back to Cleveland. So all they really agree to absorb that contract long term for Anton, and certainly he's a guy that solves a number of problems for them. So certainly a good move for Cleveland. They got him for very little. They get Big Z back at really no huge cost to them. It's a great move when you consider really how deals sometimes work.
Well, I think that was a wonderful move for Cleveland. I think it's very interesting that once again they're talking about already getting Ilgauskas back. He hasn't really, it's not even been, it's not even cold yet, but they have to be very happy with that move. And, you know, over on the west side, I think that the Dallas Mavericks, once again, were able to pull a rabbit out of the hat, Steve, with the things that they were able to do in getting Butler and Haywood, two pieces that they're going to obviously cherish and trying to make a run out here in the west.
Coach, I'd agree with you. You know, you look at that Brendan Haywood or that Caron Butler and Brendan Haywood deal gives Dallas absolutely what they were missing, a dependable low post player. And Caron Butler, I mean, he's not much of an outside threat, but he's a strong physical player. And when you start talking about the postseason and matching up with guys, you know, like a Ron Artest from your squad or Carmelo Anthony from Denver, they now have a big physical guy that can certainly hang with them. I mean, he's probably not going to be the guy that stops them in terms of shutting them down, but Dallas got much better. And this is certainly a deal for a team that was struggling. The Dallas Mavericks, probably one of the worst teams in the Western Conference over the last 2 weeks. And they're certainly going to be energized with these guys, because these guys have been in a losing environment. Winning for them is going to be fun again.
Steve, staying on the subject of West teams that I think really helped themselves along the trade deadline, when you look at what Portland was able to do in terms of acquiring Marcus Camby, talk a little bit about the impact of that trade, what you think that does to the Trailblazers.
Well, certainly it solves a problem for the Blazers. You know, they've had every injury you can imagine. Even their head coach had an Achilles tear. So, you know, it's been a weird year for Portland on the injury front. You know, the bad news is that Brandon Roy is still suffering from a hamstring injury. Now he's talking about maybe needing to shut it down for the season. So while this is a really good move for Portland in terms of really solidifying their center position, it might all be for naught if Brandon can't stay healthy. If Brandon can be healthy, you know, certainly Marcus, even where he's at in his career, he's a great rebounder, he's an intimidator on the defensive end, a great shot blocker, and a quality teammate. I think if you talk to anybody who's played with him or been part of a team that he's been on, you rave about Marcus the teammate. He's an includer. He brings things together. You know, Portland was a team that really struggled with chemistry early on, and a guy like Marcus is going to smooth out those bumps as you go through a season, and certainly as they start pushing towards the playoffs and some games maybe don't go their way, Marcus is the right guy in that environment. And again, remember, he's got a long history with Andre Miller. You know, those are going to be some guys that really kind of make the job easier for Nate McMillan.
Steve, one more question, and then we're going to take a quick break before we talk a little CBA and free agency in 2010. But you look at the Rockets and the Kings and the Knicks, and I realize it may not have much impact on this year or this year's playoffs, but it seems like everybody got what they wanted, but the Rockets may have gotten rich in this deal.
They certainly did. You know, the Rockets not only bet on the now, they bet on the future. You know, the Knicks have really just given up on pretty much everything this season, have cleared out all the cap space that they want for 2010. They have enough room to sign two maximum contract players, and the Rockets really are betting that that doesn't happen. When you look at some of the fine print of the deal here, they get the right to swap 2011 draft picks unless it's the top overall pick, and Houston's hoping they don't get any of the big three or the big four players, because it means New York's probably a lottery team next year. So, you know, this is really Houston getting kind of the best of both worlds out of Tracy McGrady, who really was not a factor for them at all this season. They get Kevin Martin, who is a high-volume scorer. He's a guy that can give you 30 points on very limited shot attempts, one of the most efficient two-guard players in the league. And certainly Kevin's got a lot to very much like, you know, those guys in Dallas. He's been part of a losing culture. I think he wants to prove that he's a winner and that he can be a big-time player for a team that matters. And Houston's not completely out of the playoff picture this year. So if Kevin can get on the ground and really fit in well, remember he's familiar with that Rick Adelman system, this could be a really good deal for Houston, not only to pay dividends today, but again, those draft assets in 2011, 2012 give the Houston Rockets a lot more leverage down the road.
All right, guys, let's take a quick commercial break here. We're going to come back and talk more NBA Who knows what's up with free agency and the CBA? We'll try and get you answers in just a moment. We continue our NBA way we hear it. We're visiting with Steve Kyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, for the very best in NBA insider information. You want to get to HoopsWorld.com 24/7. Of course, Jimmy Clemens and Mike Wilkening alongside as well. And Steve, we hear so much talk about the free agency class of 2010. These teams like the Bulls and the Knicks who are competing to have enough cap space to sign two max contract players. The Heat were in there as well. And yet, who are the players? Who are the cream of this class, so to speak?
Well, there's really four players, maybe five, depending on how you view some of them. Of course, the best is LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. Both of those guys have player options where they can become free agents in July. Chris Bosh is in that same discussion from Toronto. Amari Stoudemire with the Phoenix Suns. That's really why his name was kicked around so much at the trade deadline. And then Atlanta's Joe Johnson. And I think you start to fall off a little bit from there in terms of cream of the crop. You know, Rudy Gay from the Memphis Grizzlies is going to be a restricted free agent. Raymond Felton, point guard from the Charlotte Bobcats. And Tyrus Thomas, who was just traded to the Charlotte Bobcats, also going to be part of that free agent class. So those are really some of your bigger names as far as guys that could change your franchise fortune and really the guys that most of these teams are competing for.
The thing is, and one of the things as a former player, now coach, is everybody wants to jump out and get one or two players, and we continue to talk about a team game. And for the life of me, guys, I can't understand why these general managers and owners just take the slow approach, build a good, solid team. But the NBA is so pro-star, get you a star. We got to build our team around two-star guys. And at the end of the day, all you do is driving up your costs, which seems to be anti-economic the way the country's going right now. So somebody tell me what the hell's going on.
Coach, I can agree with you. I think there are a lot of teams that are setting their fans up for disappointment because, like you said, this is a team game. I think you look at the teams that have won the NBA championship over the last couple of years. They've been 3-4 deep. They've been teams that have stayed together. I find it hard to believe that LeBron James is going to leave a title contender to go to the empty cupboard that is the New York Knicks.
And now you're talking about the Los Angeles Clippers. They're cleared cap space to get into the LeBron race. Is this ludicrous or what, guys?
You know, guys, I think the interesting thing that strikes me is, and the reason I asked the first question, is you've got four or five teams that are all talking about having enough space to sign at least two of these guys, and there's really only four or five of these guys worth paying that money to. What is it that they think, Steve, about their franchise is going to allow them to get two of these guys? I mean, the one team that's interesting, I guess, is Miami because they can re-sign one who is their own in Dwayne Wade, and then all they might need is a Bosh or a LeBron along with Beasley to put them over the hump.
Exactly, and you consider that, you know, Miami and not doing a deal this week really is going to be able to keep a hold of some of the bird rights of their veterans like a Udonis Haslam. But, you know, I think, you know, at least from a New York, New Jersey point of view, I think that there's a belief that the market size and the future and the appeal of all of the things that can come away from basketball in those markets are appealing. I think the Clippers certainly like the idea of selling Southern California and their young roster. But, you know, when you start looking at teams like Sacramento, there's really not a whole lot there other than a young team. I think you have to say, hey, we're going to go the Oklahoma City Thunder route, and that's what we're doing is clearing cap to start to create flexibility to grab players down the road. Maybe it's not about big-name free agents, but I would say to a certain extent I think some of the big teams, the big market teams, probably have a little bit of a delusion if they think, you know, proven guys are going to walk away from situations they're familiar with to go to the unknown with no talent on the roster.
Well, Steve, here's the other piece. There is so much talk on this show, of course, the football season, about the NFL's looming labor problems. NBA is in the same boat, and it's not getting as much focus. They could very well be looking at a lockout in 2011. David Stern has said that they're going to lose $400 million this year. Now, Billy Martin has said, we want to work with them, but we're not going to roll over. Where do you see this going? I mean, is this potentially as contentious as the NFL situation seems to be?
Well, certainly there's a lot of posturing. You know, it all took place this last weekend in Dallas for the All-Star Game. You know, Players Association kind of preempting David Stern and holding their own private press conference to show how unified they were and insulted by the initial offer. And as David Stern said, you know, they took every page out of the negotiating handbook, you know, throwing out the lawyer to talk about, you know, dissolving the union, you know, using adjectives to denounce the proposal, and everything's insane. saying. You know, this is kind of part and parcel of it. I think that, you know, in the NBA, probably much more so than the NFL, you know, you do have very much a players' league. You have a league that is really powered by the players. And every time the owners have really tried to stand up to the players, you know, ultimately they cave. I think the owners always get minor concessions, but not the major concessions that were in the original offer. I think this is going to be one of those things that we hear about right until the 16th hour, and then we'll hear something that happens. But 16 months out, a lot of this is posturing. I think there are going to be massive changes. I think the players know there are going to be massive changes, just how those changes are constructed and really how much money they give back. From what I understand, it's a $280 million problem, and the players are going to have to contribute in figuring a way to get that number down.
All right, guys, we are out of time, unfortunately. Steve Kuyler, HoopsWorld.com, thank you so much. We will track you down next week. Jimmy Clemens, good luck this weekend as the Lakers roll on. Wilkie and I will be back with the Publisher's Pen in just a moment.
The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Mike, thank you very much, and I do want to point out to all of our listeners, of course, focusing on the NBA this week in addition to the NFL because of the trade deadline and the All-Star game, but we'll be talking a lot of college hoops for you as well beginning next week. Right now, though, I am struck by the really startling landscape in professional sports in America today, because everybody, I think, who follows the NFL knows about the dramatic concerns about the NFL collective bargaining agreement and the possibility that there could be a lockout in 2011. And somehow the NBA has been moving under the radar, but you just heard Steve Kuyler, our insider from HoopsWorld.com, tell you almost a certainty that the NBA faces a work stoppage of some kind in 2011 as well. And you have to ask yourself, with these sports making so much money, drawing down such huge revenues, players getting so wealthy, how is it possible that they can't figure out the relationships between management and players? And you really have two very different stories. In the NFL, you have all 32 teams making money, but a tremendous concern that some of them aren't making enough money to keep up with each other, and the fact that those revenues could dry up in the coming years. And so they want givebacks from the players. In the NBA, a very different story. You've got teams, according to David Stern, losing serious money. We've heard a reporter acclaim from the commissioner, David Stern, that it could be as much as $400 million. Steve Kuyler tells us he hears it's a $280 million problem. But the bottom line is, in the NBA, there are going to have to be player givebacks. They cannot continue to run the league with a number of teams losing serious dollars. In the case of the NFL, though, we don't know what to expect. But the thing that really struck me from Steve's comments, in which these leagues are almost identical, is that it's the owners who seem not able to get on the same page with each other in both sports, and the players just don't know how to respond. Here's what we know. We want our football in 2011. We want our NBA in 2011. Hopefully the owners in these sports will get it together, and then the players will have a chance to negotiate something that makes sense. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Our thanks to Steve Kuyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com. Randy Myers, an outstanding job as always, is our producer and engineer. And Syndication Networks, our home studio. Thank you to all of you. But most of all, thank you to our listeners. You make the show. Tune in next week, same time, same station, for more of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.